It's The Rock Show with Gully and Joe, and it is another album special. And this week, we are going to talk about Faith No More and the album Angel Dust. Released August 8th, 1992. I'll give you one random fact. Faith No More used to be called Sharp Dressed Men. But did you know that, Joe?
And Faith No Man as well, wasn't it? And then they changed it to Faith No More. Did you know Courtney Love sung in them for a little while?
Oh, God, no, please, no.
Yeah, before, what's his name? Who did the first two albums?
The guy that went and got fucked up and then just had a...
Chuck Mosley, yeah. They used to just, I think they started out sort of just being like a jam band, and it was, they would play open mic nights and just pretty much anyone could get up at some point, I felt. Because the Roddy Bottom. The keyboard player, he used to go out with Courtney Love, but he narrowly escaped her.
He's gay, isn't he?
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, Courtney Love has turned him gay.
I think he's bi officially, but aren't we all, darling?
Yeah. Oh, matron. This was the last album that Big Jim Martin was on as well, and apparently he hated it. And it left the band after touring with it.
Yeah, it was the second one. Yeah, this kind of... To me, anyway, this is kind of marks the end of there's Faith No More with and without Jim Martin. And on the next album, King for a Day, Fall for a Lifetime, you do notice that he's gone. If you listen to everything up until then, there is a change in the sound. And I think Mike became a bit more of a prominent influence on the sound at that point. They were a bit more... The keyboards were always there, but they're a bit more piano-led, piano-based. But we'll talk about that another time. But yeah, let's talk about Angel Dust. We always said it wasn't something we was going to stick to. It was just a way of getting the ball rolling. But we always said we was going to sort of do the little less obvious album, or the curveball, the one that everyone debates about, or maybe a little underrated one that people have forgotten. But when it came to Faith No More, we just went, fuck it, let's just do the classic. And they all kind of are, to a point, I think.
They've all got their pluses and minuses. And
I mean, if you take Introduce Yourself as the first album, I know We Care A Lot has been reissued recently, but you try getting hold of that back in the day. Try getting a copy of it. It was fucking impossible. Especially before the internet, when you could just order anything and you had bootlegs and stuff like that. Introduce Yourself, to me, was the official first album. We Care A Lot, to me, is a demo.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
And if you take those five albums, they were always Faith No More. There was always that strain running through it, but they constantly changed, and they were five very different albums. But I do think Angel Dust is the pinnacle. And I think everything kind of comes together. Certain bits were left behind at this album, and other things that they explored were started on this album also.
It was one of them albums as well that it was just so different and fresh for the time. If you think in 1992, what else was coming out at the time? There was nothing like this, really. And for me at the time, I was a young lad, and I was very into me heavy metal and me rock. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I like it. And it was like a jab. It was like, boom, here we are, look at this. And it was still totally different from anything else I was listening to at the time. And that's a really good thing for me, because I like to be surprised by music. And even Kerrang in 2003 said it was one of the most influential albums of all time. And do you know what? If you think about, one, how it sounds, how it's recorded, two, some of the music, some of the songs on it, they sound as fresh as they did when they came out.
Absolutely. It's not aged a day. And I'll just tell a bit about how I got introduced to it. I think I first heard Faith No More were kind of always about, I grew up with MTV, and music was on the television a hell of a lot more than it is today. Like, there was... Even if there was talk shows, and obviously I grew up with TGI Friday, or TFI Friday as it was called. But even then, you had Top of the Pops, you had The White Room, do you remember that? You had, even like on a Saturday during the day, you had the chart show. It was just music videos. Like, music was a hell of a lot more. It wasn't, I suppose it was the start of music becoming background noise, but there was always music about. So Faith No More were kind of always... at the there in the background, especially Epic, that video, I remember that summer. And I remember when Digging the Grave came out, they did it, I think, on Top of the Pops, and they did it on TFI Friday. And I knew who they were, but that was the first thing that was new. That was like, yeah, this is the new album. So I grew up a bit more. I was getting into my own thing at that point. I was into Nirvana and Marilyn Manson, and I was going to Korn and Slipknot. And my two older cousins, one got more into hip hop, and the other one got into more grunge and rock. And but all three of us, they were about four or five years older than me, but we all grew up with MTV, you know. So anyway, my old cousin said to me, have you heard Faith No More? And I was like, I know who they are, but I've not properly heard them. And then he played me Midlife Crisis. And I remember that day now. He gave me a bunch of CDs to go home with. He gave me an Alice in Chains cassette that was dirt. He gave me Super Unknown by Soundgarden. He gave me a Black Hole Sun t-shirt that didn't fit him anymore. And yeah, he gave me Angel Dust. And I went home. Well, yeah, but your older cousin goes, yeah, listen to this. And he gives me Alice in Chains. Oh, he gave me, yeah, that was it. He gave me Alice in Chains Dirt on cassette. He gave me Super Unknown on CD. He gave me Angel Dust. And he gave me Nine Inch Nails Pretty Hate Machine. Now, imagine like being at school, a teenager, when you're just soaking everything up like a sponge. And your cousin just gives you those four albums and goes, yeah, see you next week or whatever. And I was fucking changed. That visit to my cousin's house that day, everything changed that day. And yeah, I remember watching. He gave me, that was it, fucking hell, I'll keep remembering stuff, sorry. He also gave me, as I was with Angel Dust, he gave me the video called Video Croissant. Did you ever have that?
Probably.
It was up to that point, it was basically all of the videos and little clips in between. So there's all different interviews or tour footage. And there was a couple of live tracks on there as well. And there was an amazing thing about Caffeine, which I'll get to when we get to that. But yeah, I remember there and then knowing that I wanted to be in a band. I wanted to be Mike Patton. I don't mind admitting it. He was so fucking cool. He had amazing hair. I just loved how his hair would like slick back but then fall forward, and the way he just effortlessly flicked it back. But yeah, the Midlife Crisis video was just so fucking dark. And yeah, and it's just such a mixture of an album. It's just so versatile. It literally goes from verges on gothic, verges on death metal, and other times it's just pure pop, you know. It dips its toe in everything. And yeah, and you know, there's a Lionel Richie song on there, but then death metal bands cover songs from this as well. Like and it just goes to show, great music is great music, and a great song is a great song, and a great song can be switched over to a different genre if need be. A death metal band could take a Faith No More song, or some jazz singer or something could do a Faith No More track, because that's what makes a great band, is great songs, you know. A bit like Thin Lizzy. Everyone from Metallica to Mastodon to The Cause at one point covered a Thin Lizzy song.
With this, you know? One for me, I was into them before this. Fallen to Pieces, all the earlier videos that was just on heavy rotation on Headbangers Ball on MTV, when MTV actually played music and give a shit about it. And then I went to see them with Guns N' Roses and Soundgarden. Yeah, I saw them back in the day. First gig was cancelled because Axel got fucked up in Paris and couldn't make the gig. They said he had a sore throat, but he was pictured partying and getting off his cake in the papers and stuff like that. It was one of them gigs. I remember Faith No More for one or two things. I loved the music, and the second thing was Mike Patton got a piss bag thrown on stage and drank some piss. Mike Patton is nuts on stage, everyone knows it, and it was that charismatic nutter that just seems to be able to create great music. And that's how I found them, and I always remember they used to go to this youth club as a kid, and there was these older rock stars and metalheads from my school who used to go, and they were a couple of years above us in school. And I remember they'd done the do you remember the fish flapping at the end of the video? I always remember this, like 6'2", massive fucking grok of a metalhead, pretended to be the fish at the end of the song in the middle of the youth club. And always the memory that stuck with me with that particular song as well. But let's move on and talk about the actual tracks. Land of Sunshine, this has got quite a lot of Mr. Bungle's sounds in it, like the carnival sounds and keyboards. The bass throughout this album is on point. The bass sounds, it sounds great. And being a bass player, I'm all for it.
The first Mr. Bungle album, did that come out before Angel Dust?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, it was coming out around the same time, and he was hired on the back of it, I think.
Yeah, he was hired on the back of I think he passed them a Mr. Bungle demo at a gig, and then when things went shit with Chuck, they gave him a call. And I know he, when it came to recording the real thing, the album was pretty much done. They kicked Roddy out, Chuck out on the eve of recording it, and they basically told Mike, you've got 2 weeks to figure out some. They basically gave him everything recorded, and it was like, yeah, write words, figure out what you're going to do, you've got 2 weeks. And he went in and did the real thing. But I wonder when Mr. Bungle came out. Well, I'm just looking it up now. Real Thing came out in 89, Angel Dust was 92. Bear with me. Yeah, I was fucking taking. The first Mr. Bungle album was 91. Yeah, so that's right. So Mr. Bungle came out the year before this, because one thing as well, I remember my cousin saying, when you had The Real Thing coming out, Mike Patton looked like Anthony Kiedis. He had long hair, clean shaven, fresh faced. He was a boy when he had this high pitched voice.
Yeah, very nasally.
And then all of a sudden he had his hair cut. He had like that whole, you know, Italian gangster look, but goatee. But his voice, like,
it opened up.
Yeah, just what he could do with his voice, it went deeper. If you just took, like, just take Epic and then take Midlife Crisis, you would never have guessed they were the same person.
Yeah.
Like, he everything about him changed. And I suppose the first Mr. Bungle album was the bridge between it, because you still kind of hear him, but, you know, he does the death metal growls. But
I think, like, to go back to Lands of Sunshine, I've said this on other reviews, I'm always one of them people who thinks you should always put your best foot forward when you start an album. For me, Lands of Sunshine isn't the best song on this album. I don't think it's the strong track to start with, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like the introduction, the boom, and then with just the keyboard and the looping bass, and I like how it builds up, and that he does different stuff with his vocals. He brings in the crazy chorus with the laughing and the thingy, and yeah, and then he's got his operatic bit of the thingy. I think that this song kind of tells you anything can happen on this album. That song goes in a lot of different places in 3.5 minutes, and I quite like the fact that it just basically sets everything up as you're going in a lot of different places. This album goes in many different routes, and I think everything kind of is summed up a little bit on this track. It does give you a bit of an insight on what's to come. And do you know the lyrics to this song? Do you know what they are? What they're about?
Not really, because it's not one of my favourites, I'll be completely honest.
I meant, did you know what the song's about?
Yeah. I'm not sure what the song's about. That's what
it's about. It's the questions It's the questions for Scientology.
Ah.
It's that mixed up with a bunch of quotes from Fortune Cookies. So at the beginning, you have a winning way, keep it. You are an angel heading for the land of sunshine. Fortune is smiling upon you. That's all Fortune Cookies. And then at the end, towards the thing, do you often sing or whistle just for fun? Do you feel sometimes that, you know, it's, that's all, that's the questionnaire apparently they give you when you do your Dianetics. And yeah, I can help you help yourself. And I just love the way it then goes into that crazy laughing, you know, because that's what happens when you fall for that shit. Yeah, great song. I think it's a great opener, and I think it sets the tone.
There's a lot going on. There is a lot going on. There's more than just the lyrics that are in depth. There's a lot going on with this particular track. I understand why they've done it, but for me, it's not the best one. But there is better songs that more than make up for it.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's not the best. Yeah, there's peaks. There's a lot more peaks to come. But I'm just saying, I think it's a good opener.
Let's move on to Caffeine. Another little mention of the production on this album. For 1992, I challenge someone to go back and listen to the albums that were out in 92 and compare it to what Angel Dust sounds like. You won't find as a well-produced album of that time period. You just fucking won't. This sounds fresh and new. Every track on this you could take out and play to someone and say, do you want to hear this new track? It's by this band called whatever, just make up a name, and you'd listen to it and go, okay, that's pretty cool. It doesn't sound dated. The way this is produced, the way this album is mixed, and some of the things that go on in the songs as well, you couldn't date it. It's not dateable music, and great music is not dateable. And this is the case with this. Caffeine for me, it's got some nice shouty elements, but for me it is killer filler, as you say. It's not one of my favourite songs on it, so that's really pretty much where I stand with Caffeine.
I can't believe you just said that. This is one of my favourite Faith No More songs. This is one of I've always wanted to cover this song. I think it's them at them. It's Faith No More at their most straightforward. It's them at their most heavy, and if I can find it, I'll find you the live clip on the Video Quasson. The final thing on there was them doing this live, and it looked like it was on some sort of show. Like it looked like the White Room, or what was that fucking show back in the day? Was it called The Voice?
Was it The Word?
The Word, that was it. It looks like that. I don't think it was, though, but it was along those lines. They were in a studio, and there was an audience there, and they do Caffeine live, and it's a hell of a lot heavier. And Mike Patton is just at his peak doing it. Like, the way he was still, like, throwing himself back and forth, just the way he was doing his voice. The bit at the end when he's doing the, you have something to tell me. You know, just doing the whispering and... And then at the end with the screams and the way it built up at the thing, it was just so intense. And I was my first taste of that song. And I do prefer that to the studio version. So that may be why you maybe not feel as strongly about it as I do, because I do prefer the live version. And also, there's I've got a bootleg DVD of Faith No More at the Astoria in 1997. And they actually finish with Caffeine. And again, Mike's just going crazy. And he throws himself forward. And he turns around. And he just loses his footing. And he stacks it. And his head smacks the drum riser on the way down. And he is gushing blood. And it says actually on the back of the DVD that he did need stitches. They rushed into hospital. But when he's finishing the... he finishes the song, but his face is covered in blood. Like, it's just pumping out of him. And, again, that was really intense as well. So, yeah, I love Caffeine. And like I say, of all the bands I've been in, I've always wanted to cover it, but it never happens. On to the next track.
If you don't know this song within 4 seconds of it, the beginning of it, then I'm afraid you should just stop listening to metal completely, because anyone who's anyone, Midlife Crisis is one of them Faith No More stalwarts, and it was done to death at the time of release, but it still sounds great. It still sounds modern. The lyrics at times are fucking mental, but that's just what it is. But it doesn't change the fact for me that Midlife Crisis is a fucking gargantuan song. Let's be honest, it's a fucking big song. Anyone who's anyone knows this song. It's catchy, it's got earworms, and the production, again, it's spot on. It doesn't, you could take Midlife Crisis, pop it on the new Faith No More album, and it wouldn't sound out of place. That's how good this song is. Such a great song. It's one of my favourites.
I think, name a song that you can hear where it has a drum intro, like you can just tell within a couple of beats and you know the song. I can think of We Are Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister. And this, and yeah, but Midlife, this song changed my life. I can categorically tell you, for the first time, I know exactly where I was. I told you earlier, I was in my cousin's room and he played me it, and then he showed me the video, and I was never the same afterwards. I literally transformed whilst listening to this song for the first time, and I've never been the same since.
it's just a huge song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfectly well crafted. It's got a fucking wonderful dark atmosphere. Mike Patton's vocals are fucking superb. The keyboards on it are eerie. When the fucking guitar finally kicks in, and Jim Martin looks so cool on this video, the way he's just the camera just zooms up. Like across the guitar and zooms up and he's there, and then just you know, during that chorus, it just looks fucking cool. And it's just a perfect song. Everything about it is just so well crafted. And I remember they played it a couple of years ago with Hyde Park. It kind of like had like a salsa introduction. They changed it a little bit, but it worked. I prefer this one, but it worked.
Do you know what one of the biggest losses for the metal and rock music is? The fact that Jim Martin's really done fuck all for a long time.
He did a solo album, didn't he? Jason Newsted played bass on it, didn't he? But yeah, it was
a bit shit.
Some people work better as a band. They work better as a member of a band. They're a good contributor, and so a lot of people are great in a certain band, but when they're on their own, if they go solo, for example, they lose that filter, you know? And I think he just gave up, didn't he? He moved on to a farm and
made pumpkins.
Yeah.
I remember seeing pictures of him with giant pumpkins. I'm like, okay, whatever. Whatever floats your boat.
And he was in Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Station! What a shithead. Do you remember he gives a book out?
It's one of them. It's, I don't know. I just think there could have been, you know, something else. I don't know. I just still think it's a big loss.
I'd rather him do nothing, though, than do shit.
It adds to the air of mysteriousness that goes around with Jim Martin, though, doesn't it? He's always had that weird fucking thing since he left Faith No More, where it's like, he's kind of dropped off. You can imagine him wearing a tinfoil hat or something somewhere.
Do you reckon he still wears five sets of sunglasses at once? And
yeah, you can imagine him. But like, if you've watched anyone's watched the new Twin Peaks, the psychologist guy lives in the forest. it reminds me of him. So go and check out the new Twin Peaks. It'll weird you out. That's Twin Peaks is probably the story of his life, because he just comes across as a really weird character. So the next one is RV, and it's a total turn of pace. Another strong song, this one. And again, would you believe this come out in the 90s? If you listen to this, I listened to this album again, and I listen to it more often than not. A few times a month I will be listening to this album. It's still on rotation. Would you believe this come out when it came out, though? If you take this track on its own again, you're like, whoa. Seriously, it's one of them tracks. It's like, fuck's sake, it's an earworm as well.
Yeah, it's an odd song as well. And I wouldn't have said it was filler, But some songs just work on an album, if you know what I mean. That's an album track. And I always thought of this as an album track. But contrary, this was actually quite a regular in their live set. And I think it's got a pretty big sing-along-y chorus. I could see Mike Patton could pull anything off, like the way he sort of narrates it. He plays a character sort of talking to you. He sort of like comes across as like this guy that lives in a trailer and has got a shit life and hates himself, basically. It's just funny. It's when they play it live, it's like, oh, you're going to do this, are you? And yeah, and it does work. And I guess that, I hate you, you just see him getting this crowd to sort of sing along to it. That's what he could be a crooner, you know. He could do like a Barry Manilow style fucking concert. In fact, he has.
Yeah, did you see he'd done some crooning when they were in Maida Vale for Radio 1? It's on YouTube.
He did a solo album where it was like a load of Italian pop songs or something. It was a covers album, but they're all pop songs. And it was in Italian. And he played live with an orchestra and everything. Came out in a suit.
Mm. Interesting. He's an interesting guy. He's absolutely fucking mental, though, let's be honest. One thing I want to talk about is the producer, Matt Wallace, has been with them since this album. And you can tell that they've got a winning sound and formula with this guy. Because every album from this point onwards that they've done all sound awesome. The production values on every album since, including the latest one which he was involved with, sounds fresh.
Yeah, and you can tell he's seen where they're going and adapted to suit it as well. I mean, a good producer should adapt anyway to the sound of whatever band he's working in. I know some people go to certain producers because they want a certain sound. I don't mean to take that away from any of them. Those people have their place in the world, and good luck to them, like Andy Sneap, for example. People say, oh, well, they just sounds like an Andy Sneap album. It's like, yeah, but that they wanted Andy Sneap, that's why. You know, yeah. But
that's why they wanted that sound.
Yeah, I could. Matt Wallace, I mean, he's done so much as well. He's worked with so many different bands, but I don't even know where the fuck I was going with this. Yeah, the point I was making was he's changed with the band as well, and I think a good producer, if you do become, you know, you do use them regularly, you do become that sixth or fifth, whatever it is, member of the band. You know, it's like when George Martin took on the Beatles, they changed and he became the fifth Beatle, you know. And I'm trying to, is it Martin Birch did the early Maiden albums when he retired and stepped down? For better or for worse, Maiden were never the same.
Move on to smaller and smaller, and the bass again is prominent on this album. The bass sound that they've got, it sounds like he's using piano strings. It sounds that fuck. It's like getting hit with a sledgehammer. It's dun 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 dun. Proper fucking heavy bass sound and stuff. This song isn't one of my favourites. It sounds mean as fuck, this song. It's not a bad song, and the midsection on this, it just goes off on a weird tangent, which I think is pretty cool. For me, yeah, Small and Small is a good song. Is it one of the best? No, not for me, but I don't mind it. I'll still listen to it if it
comes on. Definitely. I mean, it's not the best track on the album, but it's definitely, it has its place in the album, and it sits well where it is. If you take where we've come so far, you have a really schizophrenic opener. You have the straightforward, heavy Caffeine, the dark and atmospheric, what's it called? Fucking hell, the song that changed my life. Midlife Crisis. And RV was a bit of a weird one. It was very, not a narration in there, very piano-led. So I think they kind of just drag you back into the heaviness with this track. But I like how it builds up, and I like, I love, again, Mike, he does a piercing high-pitched scream on this that I've never heard anyone do since, when it just burn and it builds up, doesn't it, burn, and it just gives it and just does this fucking scream. I've never heard it on any death metal, black metal. I've never heard King Diamond do it. I've never heard Rob Halford do it. The scream he does, and when you listen to it, you'll know exactly what I mean. I've never heard anything like that done by anyone else.
Yeah, that's true. So that's really much. There's not much more we can say about that track. And
yes, there is. I've just thought of something. Little bit in the middle. And he gives it this, he goes, does this weird tribally Indian chant thing that definitely had an influence on Korn and Sepultura.
Yeah, there's so many bands that people listen to now put this album as one of their main influences, and you can hear that the seeds were spread all through metal. This literally did changed the world for a lot of fucking people. And this, let's not fucking beat about the bush with this one. This changed the landscape of fucking rock and metal. It bridged the gap, because some of the songs on this album made it to the mainstream as well. Let's not forget how much of an impact this album made. It was fucking huge. Absolutely massive.
Yeah, but it was able to go mainstream back then. Back then, the numbers spoke for themselves. You know, if it didn't matter what it was, if it was selling, it got attention. Simple as that, you know. And yeah, you may have had the advantage. You know, people may have spent a bit of money on it, so therefore you could afford to make videos and stuff like that, and an advertising campaign. Yeah, but if it failed and didn't catch on, people, you were fucked and you got dropped very quickly. But even then, something like this, you would never get a band like Faith No More playing on Jonathan Ross or that prick James Corden, you know? And you would have back then. You would have had to have put them on. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you remember when Nirvana played Jonathan Ross and they were meant to do the single and they did Territorial Pissings?
I remember that. Jonathan Ross's face was just the picture.
Yeah, and you just know Mike would have done something like that. He would have done something to fuck with him. But yeah, it was a different time back then. Something a bit more edgy would have been able to break through. Yes, it was rare, but yeah, he at least had the one in a million chance. As small as it was, the chance was there. And you just don't have that nowadays. Everyone's fucking... Unless you're the soundtrack in Top Shop, forget it.
Yeah, it's one of them... And any of this modern pop shite will be done to death anyway. You can't get away from it. It's on the telly, it's on the adverts, it's in the fucking lift, it's in your shopping centre, it's in your shop. Any time you turn on the radio, bam, there, the same song on repeat. You get force-fed it nowadays, and then it was a little bit more organic, and things have changed. And not for a positive for me in that respect. On to a massive positive is Everything's Ruined. This track, it sounds like it was recorded last week. I love this track. The album has got so many gifts in it, even on the weird odd songs that I'm not a big fan of. I haven't listened them back to it fully again over the past few weeks. It's like, oh wow. It's almost like they jumped in the time machine with Bill and Ted, just to throw that reference in, for me to review it. It come out today. The solos are on point. Even though Jim hated doing it, the solos on this album did play a big part, and it shouldn't be overlooked at all. And every time
I think Jim's guitar on this is brilliant.
Find it every time I find this track again after not hearing it. It comes up on random play, or I just go, oh, bit of Faith No More. Go on then, let's put some of that on. It's a treat. And Everything Ruins is one of the stronger songs on the album for me. It's catchy as fuck. Try and find yourself not singing, oh, everything's ruined. If you don't do that, you've got no soul. Everything's Ruined is an amazing track for me.
Yeah, it's a great song. I mean, this is where I said this is where they go pop. It's a pop song. And if you take Midlife Crisis and this, it's two totally opposite ends of the spectrum, and yet they managed to tie it all together and fit on one album, and it works. And that was the genius of Faith No More.
Malpractice. I read about this particular track that Jim Martin hated the fucking song, and you could hear the anger at the angry guitarist at the beginning. Like, he's almost fucking taking it out on his guitar, that he's not enjoying himself. But it works, and it's a roller coaster of a song, and it's all over the place. And it works for me. And another crazy mid-section tangent, and I actually like this song. It's not one of the best ones on the album, but it's a good fucking song.
I think it's a bit like, to me, it's the part two of Smaller and Smaller. It picks up where Smaller and Smaller leaves off. It's another one that just sits nicely where it is in the album and just carries it on. But, you know, around, I love that bit in the middle where it sort of breaks down and Roddy takes over on keyboards. A boom, 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 you know, and then just kicks in again. The bells, the bells. And yeah, again, I think it's a lot in common with Smaller and Smaller on this, but yeah, I think it's a great song. Again, it's deliciously dark and a bit twisted, and no, love it.
Kindergarten. I wasn't into this track when the album came out. 1992, I wasn't really into it. I kind of skipped it. And now, I don't.
Yeah, I love it.
It's obscure and the bass does weird shit. And I like it. It's not my favourite, but at the same time, as my tastes have changed, as I've got older and become more open to fucking weirder music and some of the shit I listen to can be quite obscure, I like this track. I've grown to like it at the older I've got. At the time, I didn't like it and I skipped it. I'll be honest.
I love this song. I mean, I love that dun, dun, intro. Again, it's just another pop song. You know, it's darker and heavier than typical pop, but it's the formula's there, and there's a real melancholiness about it. You know, it's about returning to your school. You know, fear. I don't know. Maybe your kid goes there now, and you've just gone back, and you're retreading old ground, or you've visited a school fete or a school reunion. I don't know. But there's a, I just think he captures a thing of revisiting an old place that you used to go to a lot. You may have go back to your old town, or, and, you know, good memories come back and bad memories come back. But there's a, you're revisiting somewhere and it's full of echoes, you know, and it can be a bittersweet experience. It could be a depressing experience, but I do think this song captures that, and it's not something people write about often or address much in a song, but it's something that does happen to all of us at some point, you know what I mean? And it's an odd feeling, and that odd feeling is captured on this song perfectly. I bet even at there's just a little quiet bit in the middle of the song where, again, it's the same riff, it's the same keyboard. It just loops, it just goes quieter, and it kicks back in. Everything got quiet suddenly. You know, the theatre is empty. The film is over. The theatre's empty. It's like there was a party here once. Something happened here, and now it's just an empty room, you know? And I'm rambling again. But yeah, fantastic song, and I love it. Love this song. And I love the next song. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Be Aggressive. This album gives me so many songs that I really, really fucking love. This, I cannot pick my best song of this album because there's so many of them. Bottom line, this is a chop tune. The lyrics are about oral sex. So try not to sing along with this song. Try not to sing along. If you don't sing along with this song when you're listening to it, then there's something fucking wrong with you. The solos have got that, like...
And we all know you swallow.
Yes. And you're the master and I'll take it on my knees. The solo sounds ragged. It sounds like... It sounds really, really raw and, like, there's no production on it. It just sounds dead crunchy and it just fits. Can you imagine what Faith No More would sound like with Jim Martin still in it? I think they'd still be pretty fucking good, to be honest, but this is one of my favourite songs. With the kids singing along, Be Aggressive, it gives a sinister turn to it. What a great song. It still stands up to the time right now for me. It's a fucking amazing song.
This is actually a regular opener to their concerts as well, and I think it works out. It works great, you know, just that they walk out, greetings everyone, you know, and then da-na-na-na-na-na-na, bang, kicks in. And I will put to you, you didn't like Land of Sunshine as an album opener. Would this be a worthy opener in its place? Would you prefer the album open with this instead?
Yes.
It would definitely 100%. Work. Yeah.
Yeah. The way it kicks in. Yeah, 100% would work.
There's not really much to say about this. It's just a great...
It's another one.
It's another song that's... It's Faith No More, isn't it? If someone said to me, who's Faith No More, how would you... You'd play them this easily. It sums everything up. You'd go, if you don't like this song, forget it.
Yeah, if you don't like this song, there's something fucking wrong with you anyway. How many grade A songs can one album produce? Lots, and that's with Small Victory. Another top quality track. It's catchy as fuck, this song. It's fucking catchy as fuck. The latter end of this album, it goes from like a 5 and a 6, and then as this album progresses, this album goes off the fucking charts for quality. It really builds up well. You can hear the bands since this album taking influences from this, in particular this song, regular rotation on my phone. It's just a good sing alonger song. It's something when it comes on that you're not going to skip, no matter how you feel in that particular time. You'll go away feeling better from listening to this song, and that's all you can ask from music, is to be emotive. Small Victory, great song.
Again, this is how the album goes. It goes heavy song, commercial song, heavy song, commercial song, and they literally go from metal to pop. And again, another great pop song. This had a great video as well, a really big budget one as well. And it wasn't just them performing the song in a warehouse. It was like all war scenes and that. It was like full production. It was like watching a small film. And it's just great. That great catchy keyboard lead as well. And Mike Patton's lyrics have always been perfectly vague. Do you know what I mean? Like, with Kindergarten, I told you what that song means to me. Someone else might not get that. But every song, you may not know exactly what it's about, but there's always a line, which you just think, that's a great line. You know, it just hits the nail on the head. And I love the, it shouldn't bother me. And he repeats it, it shouldn't bother me. But it does, you know. How many times have you said that in your life? Has there been a little row or something happened at work? Or it's, I know it's fucking petty, but it's still fucking annoying. And you know you fuck what you're doing, you prick. You know, yes. I just love that. How many times has, like, he hit the nail on the head there? How many times have you felt that way? But enough, it, you know. but you've not been able to quite word it. And that line to me just hits. I know it shouldn't fucking bother me, but it does.
Yeah, it's some of the lyrics. If you can get an attachment to some of the lyrics on this album, then you're sold on it. There's always little bits that stick with you, and this album is building up to be one of the highest rated from both of us. I'm getting that general feeling at the moment. Let's move on to Crack Hitler. A bit of a war to start with. This is another song that's aged better. It's like a fine wine. You can hear where he goes later on with other bands that he's done, where he's got the megaphone into the mic. This is where all that starts really opening up. He loves his sound effects. He literally must have his own like little fucking flight case full of little weird ass sound effects that he has. I know it comes from Mr. Bungle, but this is where he starts using it in his mainstream band Faith No More. And it's a funky song and it's a hidden gem. And the change of pace in the song works well, I think.
Faith No More was the only band I saw, Mike Patton, where he's just got the microphone. But when they reformed, he started doing it as well. But I saw Mike in Mr. Bungle, I saw him in Phantomus, and I saw Tomahawk. And at those bands, it was always, he wasn't at a keyboard, but he always had like a desk with stuff on. If he had a keyboard, it was a little one sort of at the bottom, but he always had like a desk with weird knobs and stuff like that. And he would have six, maybe even more microphones. So he'd be singing in one microphone and then he'd just start screaming in another, and then he'd pull out like a megaphone, then he'd have like a thing that, like a radio thing that the police have in their car, he'd pull that out, and yeah, he'd be swapping microphones the whole time. And he started doing it again when Faith No More reformed, but yeah, up until that point, Faith No More was the only band I saw Mike Patton just have the microphone and that was it. But to me, this track is a killer filler. I don't dislike it, but if I'm in a rush, I'm probably more inclined to skip this track. I think a song that was recorded during this session was A Perfect Crime, and that was on the Bill and Ted Bogus Journey soundtrack. I think if this song was relocated to B-side status and Perfect Crime could be on the album and replace this track.
I'm with you on that one. There is better songs on the album, but it still fits.
It fits. I mean, far from it being a bad album, a bad track, but at this point, it's Faith No More doing what Faith No More does.
Just to go back to talk about Tomahawk for a second, God Hates a Coward. Why wasn't that a Faith No More track? That's a fucking awesome track.
Tomahawk was the band's. While everyone was waiting for Faith No More to reform, Tomahawk was the band to tie you over.
They had some great tracks, and if you could, just put that God Hates a Coward on any of the Faith No More albums, and just be like, yeah, that's Faith No More. Though I love that track.
Yeah, the second album they did had a song called Rape This Day, and it's fucking excellent. Like it's just a great Mike Patton song. You know what I mean? It would fit in Faith No More, but. Basically, when anything Mike Patton did that was palatable and was just a song, that could be Faith No More. Everything else was just weird.
Next song is Jizzlobber. It's a chaotic intro. It works for me. The sound quality production again on this song just shines out. It's a beacon of how albums should have sounded in that time period and how albums should sound now. And when, if you compare it to anything else, they sound like shit at the time. I like the ranty, shouty bits of it, and there's the midsection of the song where it changes up. And it's erratic, this album, at times. It's like that crazy girl that everyone's ended up going out with at some stage. Great when they're great, but fucking mental when they're not. And I'm all for it. This is the song for me that should have finished the album.
It goes
all cathedral at the end with the gothic sounds things. It should have finished the album. Now, we've got two versions of this album. The original album that came out finished with Midnight Cowboy and Not Easy. But we're going to review Easy because why not? Because it was a fucking huge song. But this, for me, should have been the album finished.
Yeah, I'm 100% agree with you there. Absolutely 100% agree with you.
Yeah, Jizzlobber for you. How do you find it?
I find it another killer filler track. I get it. It's a good album closer, and it fits, but it's not something I'm particularly looking forward to watching it live. I'd feel robbed if they didn't do Midlife Crisis or Everything's Ruined or Small Victory, Be Aggressive, Kindergarten. To be honest with you, it's pretty, it's great song, great song, great song, peak, peak, peak. Kindergarten is a 1-2-3 punch with Be Aggressive and Small Victory. Small Victory is a real majestic song, you know, and I think Crack Hitler and Jizzlopper sort of lay things down nicely. That Crack Hitler and Jizzlobber are a good closer, and they're not particularly singles or particularly great live tracks, but they have their place on the album. So I would call them killer filler, and Jizzlobber is just a scatty, erratic way to bring the album to the close. And I think Midnight Cowboy and Easy should have been B-sides or bonus tracks, nothing more. Midnight Cowboy can fuck off in my eyes. I don't know why it's on there. Easy was funny, and they at least pulled a song off.
It was
like trolling in a way. It was a rock band covering a Lionel Richie song and ended up doing it better than him.
The transvestite on the video as well.
That's great, and I could see why it would be a bonus track, or if it became a really successful single, they'd then put it on the out, like reprinted versions. Right, the next batch we print, put Easy on it because that's what people want to buy. Yeah, I get that, but Midnight Cowboy did not need to be on there. I would rather a Perfect Crime, take off Midnight Cowboy and put Perfect Crime, either replace Crack Hitler or put it in between Crack Hitler and Small Victory. But A Perfect Crime should have been on this album, especially Midnight Cowboy. Fuck that off. And there's also a track on the We Care A Lot, the first album, As The Worm Turns. That was a real regular live track during this time, and they actually re-recorded that song during this album session. And if you get the anniversary edition of Angel Dust that came out last year, that studio version is on that. That could have fit on here as well, easily.
Yeah, I'll go with you on Midnight Cowboy. You shouldn't have been on the album. Never mind the B-side. It's just indulgence. But one thing I say, they did go all out creatively and with this album. They did just throw it out there and see what happens. And that's why it stands up now. And Midnight Cowboy, no. Easy, I can see why they done it, but it shouldn't have been on the album. On the original release, it wasn't. Finished with Jizzlobber. And then that's it. That would close it off for me in the best way they could have. So let's sum it up. I can't really describe in words how much this changed music for me, how much this changed my outlook on things I would be wanting to listen to, and it opened up more doors musically for me than any other album I have ever listened to. It broadened my horizons musically. It changed my outlook, and it changed basically music and metal and rock in general. It bridged so many genres with one album, so many great tracks from one album. I'm not going to give you my rating. I'm going to wait until out of 10 you've told me how you feel about it, and then we'll both give a rating.
You pretty much summed it up, really. I mean, if anything, this album did more than anything, it was open doors. it, you know, and I remember like listening to Fear Factory and thinking how much they had in common with Faith No More, because it was heavy, they had a versatile vocalist and they had keyboards. I mean, so often when you introduce keyboards into a rock band, it can kill it or give it that extra layer, and Faith No More demonstrated how you could do that perfectly. But yeah, again, Mike Patton as a vocalist, just the band as songwriters, and I think Jim Martin was missing after this album. I mean, I love what they did afterwards, but this was them at their peak. It really did. Everything came together in this album, and it's a perfect album, no matter what genre. If you're into alternative music in general, if you're into rock, and whatever avenue you decide to go down afterwards, you may go into a bit more of a classic rock, or you may like death metal and black metal and stuff like that, or might like keep it easy and you like a bit more mainstream. I think this album deserves to be in your collection regardless.
Yeah, it's something you need to have. If you don't have it and you've not listened to it, why you're punishing yourself if you've not listened to this album. It's such a great album. So let's close it out with some ratings. 9 out of 10. I'm hesitant to give it 10 because there's a Midnight Cowboy, you fucking shit piece of song. That was a little bit too self-indulgent, and there's a couple of tracks on there where I'm not. But 9 out of 10 is the highest rating. Let's not dismiss what I've said. It's the highest rating for any album I have ever listened to, bar none. And it is one of my top 5 albums, without a doubt. A well-earned, groundbreaking album that sounds as fresh as it did in 1992 as it does now. I can't put it any better than
that. I'd give it 10. Even with its imperfections, there might be a song here that I may skip, or and the whole Midnight Cowboy doesn't need to be on there. Even still, the impact it's had on me, it can't not be a 10. If any downfall, as small as it is, the good sides more than make up for it and make it irrelevant. So I love this album, and I'll get buried with a copy of it.
It is such a great album. It's changed so many people's lives, and so many musicians around the world have taken influence from it. So that's it. That's our review. We're both going on holiday for a little bit. So we'll be back when we're back, and we'll decide what we want to do when we do it. If you want to send us a message, you can on Twitter at Rock Show Online. You can find us on facebook.com/ The Rock Show Online, and you can find our website, which is rockshow.uk. If you have enjoyed our review of the show, then don't just listen to it and be an ignorant bastard. Fucking post it on social media. Share the show, because we actually do work quite hard, and we've been quite regular with our shows of late. So come on, show us some love. Share the show.
Share it, man. The bigger listeners we get, the more things we can do, the more things we can justify. It goes from there. You know, we're a small podcast, and we've had some fucking impressive guests, if I say so myself. But, you know, people that... podcasts and magazines that have a hell of a lot more viewers and listeners and readers than we have, we're getting them on. We've got the connections. So, you know, the more we have, the bigger this thing gets. And it's all because of you. And, you know, we don't patronise you. We don't ask for a Patreon. We don't shove adverts down your throat. So all we ask for in return, if you love this show, just share it. Like and share, my friends. That's all I ask. All we ask, sorry.
Yes, that's all Joe asks, and I ask it too. So with that in mind, it's time to go. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
No, it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Girl, I'm leaving you tomorrow. Seems to me, girl, you know I've done all. Baby.